Hello and welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Community Association Networks. That's the NCRA stations across Canada. Mostly we're on British Columbia's west coast of Canada. So I'm, of course, Kelly Rayburn on the controls here. calling from us on at his home is Michael Ribbon Clogs. How are you doing, Michael?
I'm doing pretty awesome. I had to get to the doctor today with my wife and everything. You know, checkups for some hemoglobin problems, things like that.
Okay.
But everything's looking up, and we're going to have a pretty exciting show today. The topic if anybody had recently been joining us on Facebook, Paul Gilbert and another few people were talking about spouses and having a disabled spouse and how the government actually is treating us and how what the limitations are to what the government is willing to pay out and programs and things like that.
Right.
So with that, Paul, you're there, right?
Yes, there. I'm doing great too.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's a very important topic. All across North America, actually, they've been fighting this this same problem in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We refer to it as marriage equity. For people with disabilities, usually we have to explain what that means, though.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, so why don't you give us the Cliff Note explanation on what that actually means?
Well, there's several aspects to it. If you're married and you have a disability and you're married to someone, you don't generally qualify because they have an income. You don't generally qualify for disability benefits. On top of that, if you are on disability benefits and you live with somebody for 3 months or you marry them, you suddenly can lose all your income. In both cases, one is a barrier, two is to actually qualifying, and the other one is the removal of your benefits after you get involved in a relationship with somebody. So there's the government apparently doesn't want people with disabilities to have love in their lives. It's pretty regrettable. I don't understand their thinking behind it.
Now, Paul, I just wanted to mention that is it similar to what the BC government has happened before separating seniors?
You mean having seniors live in different care homes?
Yes.
I don't think so. I think that's more mostly based on medical needs. I don't know if it's with this. It's just money that the government wants to keep. If there's two people with disabilities on benefits, they earn less than they would if they were individuals on benefits. For example, if it was two people on benefits, you'd earn $2,266.84 a month. But instead, what you get if you're a couple on disability, you get $1,497.56 a month, which is quite a cut clip.
Yeah, and I don't understand the justification, because it sounds like 70% and 70% put together doesn't equal the meeting the needs of two.
Yeah. Well, especially since I can't imagine people actually surviving. I find it hard to imagine how people can survive on $1,100 or $1,200 a month anyway, with the economy and the housing situation as it is. But yeah, they're one of the big problems with this, and the government knows this, is that intimate partner violence is seriously high for people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
2 to 3 times higher than for women. It's 2 to 3 times higher than it is for women without disabilities. And when you look at why, you know, how intimate partner violence evolves, it's stressors in the home and lack of money and all these other things, and the needs of the person with disabilities, needs being something that you have to look after. So there's all, they're completely ignoring the fact that they're stressing these people out and causing these things to happen. At the same time, they don't have any programs for people with disabilities, and most shelters aren't accessible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they just spent $5 million on intimate partner violence for people without disabilities, but they didn't spend any money or design any programs for people with disabilities. This is something that's historic. It's been happening all across Canada forever, and they'll list people with disabilities on their list as people who are at risk, but they don't do anything for them.
It's a list if there's no action taken, right?
Yeah, paper programs.
Mm-hmm.
But the government's actually the one responsible for causing the problem.
Right.
They're knowingly causing people to have problems. So I mean, if you have a disability, you're not allowed to be in love with somebody, and if you are, you can lose your housing, you can lose your physical supports, you can lose your income. It's sort of unbelievable that the government would do this and not think of the consequences. Hello?
I often wonder out of the politicians, because we were talking a little bit off air, some of the more extreme things that they do due to people with disabilities. In this conversation, we're really talking about the financial end, but some of the mindsets that some politicians get in, where they want to talk about forced sterilization or apprehension of children, things like that, because, hey, you're disabled now, so we're going to increase spending in other areas, when simply put, they could have just made sure that the family, to keep the family together as a whole, or keep the couple together as a whole, that they just simply gave support. And I don't understand how that mindset actually works. And you would agree it needs to change, right?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that they do is take people with disabilities, children, away from them. We have a lot in common with the Indigenous population in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe that the government actually thinks we're human beings sometimes.
Yeah. I think that's the point, does the government actually, who does the government see as being a human being, and who do they think they see as being just some disposable lump of protoplasm.
Sorry, my apologies there. Go on.
Glad to wake us up.
I'm sorry about that. I thought we were not on the... Sorry. Eesh. Stop it. There we go.
We were getting too sedate. Kelly.
Yeah. My apologies.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Shut him off now.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Let's wake up the audience here.
Yeah. Go on.
Yeah. Go ahead, Paul.
So you've got people who they can access mobility devices and supports, so they can be independent, or they can be married, or they can get medication and therapies, or they can get married, or they can have an accessible place to live or be married, or they can have food, or they can be married. I mean, it's just insane.
Right.
Well, one of the basic human needs is we of course we have water, shelter, food, but we forget about the basic human need of touch, to be able to touch each other, and the hug, the love, all that sort of stuff is actually a need, not just shouldn't be listed as a privilege, right?
No, of course not. It's pretty important. And loneliness has health consequences. It's not good for people to be isolated all the time. And they're also that's one of the problems with domestic violence and the disabled, is the isolation, not mm-hmm. being able. The domestic violence with people with disabilities is more intense, and it lasts longer because it's harder for them to escape.
Right.
And partially, once again, the government isn't helping.
Well, the government, by cutting funding towards family, to different families or different situations, they're actually contributing because of the stress and strain to the person who isn't disabled, right?
Oh yes, I have a friend in Ontario that's a paralegal, and paralegals can function in the law there. And their significant other is disabled, and it makes it so that they have to make a lot more money to be able to support the entire the full family.
Right.
It's quite wearing, and that's the sort of thing that does lead to domestic violence. Anger and frustrations. People should be forced into that sort of situation.
So, I guess I'm jumping ahead a few steps here. But what would you like to see the government actually roll out as a program to help ease these situations?
Well, for one thing, they should be designing programs for people with disabilities and making sure that shelters are accessible. They want to make a better BC by building things. Well, that's one of the ways they could do that. Aside from that, I personally believe very strongly that people, there should not be any income tests on families. People with disabilities, that if somebody qualifies for disability benefits, they should receive those benefits regardless of whether or not they have a significant other.
Yeah.
And if there's two people with disability benefits, they should receive their individual benefits, not benefits that the government's clawed back because they think that two people can eat cheaper than. Two people married can eat cheaper than two people independent, and then of course money for whatever children they have. To actually lump everything together and use the fact that people are together as a cash cow is just inappropriate. The West Coast Leaf, when they presented to the government last year, about this issue, they asked that the government change the requirements that are for common law marriage. In most cases, it's something like it's for people with disabilities. It's 3 months. It's not that for everybody else in the province.
Wait a second. How does that work? How do you shorten incubation time on a relationship because a person has a disability?
Exactly. And on top of that, you not only get to be married to this as somebody with a disability or common law with someone with a disability, you also get to be get to have force them into total dependency financially. It's not the sort of thing that you that people with disabilities want. I mean, generally, we want our independence.
Well, yeah, that and that's a very basic to being a fulfilled human being is knowing that you're independent, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No. What do you think, Kelly?
I thought it was pretty well done. I imagine the conversation that my situation on disability. I mean, I am single, of course, and I'm not a married couple or something like that. And this sort of situation, if I were to, you know, if I were to get married to a couple or something, this is quite fascinating.
But Kelly, you date, right?
Not really.
Okay. Because I know at one point you had a girlfriend or something.
I did, but I don't want to tell everybody about it right now. So.
No, that wasn't what I was getting at, though.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm just saying. Suppose you met someone and the relationship escalated to a certain level.
Yeah. Like, well.
You know,
that's sort of my private thing, so I don't want to talk about that right now.
Okay. We'll leave it alone, I guess.
Well, there's a whole bunch of financial issues that happen with people with disabilities. If you manage to get a job with all the employment discrimination there is out there, right. And save up money, and then you lose your job and are forced back onto disability benefits. You can't get disability benefits until you use up all your savings.
Right.
If you're on disability benefits and you have a child and they're making money, they can take that money back from off of your disability benefits.
Mm-hmm. Can we have a pause for just a moment here?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you're tuning to the Community Living Show on the NCRA radio stations. Our special guest is Paul Gilbert, who is the member of the BC Disability Caucus, and we will be right back in just a moment. Now we are going to do our 3-minute segment.
Okay.
And now a 3-minute segment with Michael Rubin Cloggs.
The title of today's video is Don't Complain to Me. And the reason why it's called that is complaining, there's a few problems with complaining. One, it takes us from our mindset from a state of gratitude into a state of lack, meaning that we don't have what we want, and we're telling the universe to give us more of what we don't want instead of what we do want. When we stay in a state of gratitude, we actually find success, we find joy, we find happiness, we find all those things that we are looking for and that we're craving, with better relationships and just a whole lot more of things that we love and enjoy. Imagine your life filled with happiness and peace, love, trust, all those things that we just love to have around us. When we fill our lives full of lack, and we complain about things, we never seem to have enough of what we want. We always feel empty. We never feel whole. We never feel completed. So we always want to try to keep ourselves in a state of gratitude so that we feel wonderful about just being alive. So don't complain to me. And when you stop complaining and you find a state of gratitude, you'll be surprised at the amazing things that happen and the amazing things that you just experience. You find all this beauty that is out there in the universe, and you find very little of the things that you think you are missing. I will talk to everyone later, and bye for now.
The
The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of each year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting exclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adaptive technology, and more. For more information, contact your local stations about the National Access Day. You're tuned into the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. My name's Kelly Rayburn, and along with me on the phone at home is Michael Rubin-Cloggs. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, Kelly. And we have Paul Gilbert with us from the BC Disability Caucus, and we were talking about how the government treats people with disabilities or couples that have a disabled person in them. And Paul, you actually made, while we were off air, you made another comment about the Canada Pension Plan.
Yes, but the government, what they do when you turn 60, they force you to apply for Canada Pension Plan benefits, and mm-hmm. then they keep that money so that they're not really giving you any benefits any longer from 60 to 65. And because you get that Canada Pension Plan money early, it decreases your retirement income by 33%, I believe it is. And most people's pensions, if they're poor, aren't that wonderful to begin with. So it's a pretty dire circumstance that they're putting people into. I don't understand their thinking. The income, the idea of disability benefits being the income of last resort has always struck me as being quite problematic, because it would be fine to actually consider it that if the government was doing anything that actually improved the labor force participation rate of people with disabilities, but they haven't, and it's been that way for decades. We have a flat labor force participation rate that doesn't change.
Right.
They're watching all these people with disabilities being discriminated against in the workforce. Not only do people with disabilities end up having a hard time finding work, but that they the quality of their work is lower than people without disabilities. They tend to be micromanaged if the employer knows they have a disability. But the government knows this, but they don't do anything about it. It's except maybe you give people wage subsidies and that lead into precarious jobs that end as soon as the subsidy's gone.
If you look out into the community, what you see is, oh well, that person has a disability, so their greeter at the front door of Walmart is, you know, but they could do so much more.
Well, yeah, there's an incredible number of people out there with disabilities that actually have post-secondary educations and are trying to get into the professions. They tend to be underemployed. And also what happens with them in their professions is usually get marginalized if people know they have a disability. So it makes life harder for them. Instead, the government is pretending that we don't exist mostly. I don't know if you watched the coverage from the Holocaust Remembrance Day. John Horgan mentioned everybody except the disabled in Holocaust Remembrance Day. Right. Which it's considering the Nazis came for us first. to completely ignore that, it's like they don't want us. We're not citizens. We're not members of the population.
Yeah, the citizen issue. We're going to have another expert come on a later show to talk to us about what it actually means to be a Canadian citizen and what the actual rules are to being a Canadian citizen. It's going to be rather shocking.
It's not easy to get into Canada, that's for sure.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised at how easily citizenship can be lost here in Canada. And that's part of what this other expert will talk about on a later show. But it does seem that if you have a disability, that if you are a citizen, that you're not a first full class citizenship, you're a lesser class citizen, and that's not how it's supposed to work, right?
No. It just amazes me how I keep on sending John Horgan this meme that says disability isn't shameful, but stigma is. Say the word, because he doesn't. So they don't like saying the word disability. they when they introduced their human rights commission, they mentioned disability at their press conference, but not in their press release. So the fact that people with disabilities exist was deleted from their media materials. Mm-hmm. It's I jumped all over that one, but it's disturbing because we're over 14% of the population. We're the largest minority group on the planet, and the assessment of us as being about 14.3% is based on a medical model more than a social model. If you have a facial disfigurement, you can do all the activities of daily living, but so you would qualify for disability.
Mm-hmm.
But your chances of being hired are pretty remote.
Right.
Because you have a disability and they can see it. So it's amazing that the UN's basic definition of disability includes the social model, where they talk about the environment and how that impacts on your impairment. But at the provincial level, they're still dealing like we're in 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to actually figure out any way of getting them to pay attention. We really encourage people to email or Twitter, tweet or whatever, or write their MLAs and the premier and maybe Carol James.
And maybe some of the federal MPs?
Yes, and talk about the fact that disability rights are needs are not being met, that their clawbacks and other things they're doing with us are completely unjust. It's they do tend to pay some attention to that, but not as much as you'd think. That's one of the problems with government is that they whip MPs and MLAs into voting along with the party. So when you elect an MP or an MLA, you don't necessarily get them. You get what the party decides needs to be done.
Right.
So.
And I know some of the parties, if everything's done by way of caucus or committee.
Yes.
Right. Whatever the group vote is, that's the direction they take it.
Yeah, it's interesting because we have all these policy conventions in parties every year or so, and the members come up with policies. But when the government's in power, or when they're not in power, the people who were elected as MLAs or MPs decide policy apart from what the but the party membership would like.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a problem with people with disabilities. Before Harcourt was elected at a policy convention, the members voted to raise the disability and income assistance rates to the poverty line and index them.
Yeah.
And that was never done because, as everybody knows. But it's the NDP or the Liberals have values that their members share, but you don't necessarily see those values reflected in government.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I don't think most people, if most people knew that people with disabilities are treated the way they are as far as marriage is concerned, and how they're, and the result is domestic violence and things like that. I don't think most, I think most people wouldn't approve.
I would have to agree that most people would not approve if they, they knew the level of domestic violence that actually does occur.
Yeah. Yeah, I have read some, I was doing a lot of reading, and I read some real horror stories about domestic abuse, sexual abuse, and things happening because somebody is dependent.
Right. Yeah. I was going to go forward on to that issue because, yeah, I know we talked most about it yesterday on our Facebook group, and we were saying about, you know, domestic violence and domestic sexual abuse on the disability side. It just seems that they're forcing to do it, but the victims that are speaking to the public isn't mentioning about it through the public.
No, it's very hard to get media attention on this. I actually had a news reporter that was thinking wanted to have an interview on TV about sexual abuse in people with disabilities, but their bosses weren't interested in broadcasting the story because they didn't think the public would be interested.
Yeah, I remember yesterday making it would seem to be an off color comment about it. Because of how the media talks about things. So I won't exactly repeat verbatim what I said yesterday in our chat.
Well, that's a good
But what it means is that commercial media says this: if I can't sell a product with that story, then I don't want to tell the story.
Yes.
And that's what the problem is, and some of that can change with public outcry, but the public has to know that they need to outcry about it, and that's where the catch is as independent, Kelly, that we actually do try to put light to these issues, But there's the public's gotta know that, hey, there's a problem here, and that the commercial media doesn't want to report it because the corporations say that, hey, we can't sell a product with this particular story, and sexual abuse to people with disabilities is one of those issues that the corporations figure I can't sell any product with that. Because the attitude of the corporation is that it's like the government that, hey, they're not full citizens anyway.
Yeah,
well,
but they don't.
Sorry.
So, but we're also seeing that we're seeing a lot of sexual cases in other industries, like movie industries, business industries, you know, that sort of stuff. And it's spreading all over to the public, but we're not seeing it, a lot of it, on disability issues.
Yeah.
The problem is that for some strange reason, the general public thinks that the disabled are asexual. I mean, there are people who are asexual in the world, but the disabled aren't asexual, and they have relationships, and often involve sex, and they're just as subject to abuse. Well, much more subject to abuse, sexual abuse, and physical abuse, and emotional abuse, and then people without disabilities. Mm-hmm. For people who are nonverbal, who are disabled, I came across this stat that said they were 11 times more likely than the non-disabled to be subject to sexual abuse.
Yeah, and it goes to the point where non-advocates do try not to speak about it because it keeps them inside of them. It doesn't say anything to the public, and that's why we, as a self-advocate people, need to say some stuff about the sexual violence and the physical violence in our society.
Well, yeah, it's wonderful that you guys exist because you give people with disabilities a voice,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
we don't have a lot of voices.
Yeah,
it's very hard to get people interested in the sort of issues. I remember when they were talking about, we haven't heard very much about changes to seniors care, mm-hmm. and I think of seniors as disabled because generally most people over a certain age end up with a disability. And the abuse in seniors care is just staggering. It's the physical and sexual abuse of seniors by people who are in the seniors' homes and by et cetera. It's really astronomic, and a lot of that is because of privatization. There's not enough staff to keep an eye out.
Right.
So, but the government's not been moving very fast on that. And they're,
yeah,
I mean, these people are being victimized. It's just, it's unbelievable.
Kelly, you brought up an interesting point about the nonverbal, with some of the seniors, especially if they have dementia,
right?
And say they immigrated from another country, and English is of course a second language. Through the ways of how dementia actually starts peeling away layers of the memory, that person will be trying to tell you that something's wrong, something's going on, but they forgot how to speak English. So
right.
They're speaking a foreign language, and nobody else in the building may actually speak the language. So they might as well be as good as nonverbal.
True.
They cannot communicate what it is that's happened to them, and they're a live victim.
But if you're in another country, I mean, there should be other different languages that deal with disability and sexuality, not just in Canada, but mostly around the world, around the globe, for
right.
that matter.
Yeah. But if that person immigrated here to Canada and through by means of dementia, they've gone back to whatever their home language would have been.
Right.
Then because of the lack of resources here in Canada, that there isn't a person who can actually translate, like say they were from Vietnam.
Right.
There isn't a person to translate it back from Vietnamese back to English to say, hey, so-and-so over the caregiver over there is sexually abusing the patient or the resident.
It should be somewhere down the line in the Middle East. You know, there are a lot of poor countries where domestic violence is still happening.
Yeah. In a routine.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. There's with the issue about seniors in care, it reminds me of one of the big problems that the disabled face. When Tommy Douglas was around, he was constantly advocating for protecting Medicare.
Now, Tommy Douglas was the MLA for Manitoba Premier?
Yeah, Saskatchewan.
Oh, yes. Saskatchewan, okay.
He was the first leader of the NDP.
Right.
He brought in Medicare in Saskatchewan, and then it was spread across the country with the help of Diefenbaker.
Right.
But it was comprehensive health insurance that he was aiming at.
Okay.
And over mm-hmm. time, that's been it's been subject to such a subtle strangulation where they cut off things that you can get. So people with disabilities who need physiotherapy, for example, they can get some help with 10 sessions, but they can't afford the cost that they had to contribute to actually get physiotherapy or occupational therapy or chiropractic or what have you.
Mm.
So there's the disabled don't have Medicare.
No.
for rehab of injury or disease, because the government's just decided that they won't give it to them. It's interesting that this is a major NDP plank, one of the most important things they've ever done that they recognize as one of their greatest achievements, but they take it away from the disabled?
Right. Well, I'm going to have to put it on hold for just a moment. Can you guys hold on for just a moment?
Yes. Okay.
You're tuned into the Community Living Show on the National Campus Radio Association Networks. We're talking to Paul Gilbert, who's in Victoria. He's also a member of the BC Disability Caucus. We will be back in just a moment. Show is Stories for the People with Disabilities, self-advocacy, adaptive technology, and many other issues, along with accessibility issues. If you want to participate and are a member of any of the NCRA radio stations, including this station that you're listening to in the area, or if you have any story idea and want to become involved in the technician personnel, please email us. Our email address is communitylivingradio@gmail.com. No experience necessary. People with disability or non-disability are welcome to the show.
There's only one way that old clunker is going to make you feel good again. Donate it to Bullying Canada. Check this out. Free towing or pickup of your old vehicle, a tax-deductible receipt, and a super easy process. Online at bullyingcanada.ca. Get rid of that old vehicle and feel good about supporting real solutions for change in your community. Donate your old or used vehicle to Bullying Canada today. Full details online at bullyingcanada.ca.
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM with Relly Rails and Jules Andre Brown.
You are tuned in to the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. I'm Kelly Reburn. On the phone at home is Michael Ruben Cloggs. And I'm assuming you're at home, Paul. Am I right?
Yes, I'm at home.
Yeah, so both of you are at home, but both different areas. You're in you're in White Rock and Paul's in Victoria, so.
Yeah, I would have loved to have gone overseas to see Paul in Victoria.
Across the strait.
I just didn't make it across that right. Little body of water that separates the two of us. Even though I live pretty close to it, so.
Don't forget your phone.
So we're talking with Paul about how the government treats couples and domestic violence and I guess the last segment we started talking about sexual abuse to people with disabilities and our seniors because they can't communicate to people that hey I'm being mistreated or should I just say it outright, it's like hey I'm being raped, and it's a huge problem in our care system. Mm-hmm. That safety is a basic human right, is it not?
Yes. Yeah, we signed the International Covenant on Human Rights, and then we went promptly ignored it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, it amazes me. One of the things that's come up recently is that library services for people with print disabilities is at risk in BC.
How so?
Actually, across Canada, the CNIB developed this resource of all these different audiobooks, then they contracted, they spun it off, and they're selling the services to the government. Are selling access to the government through something called CELA.
Right.
And in BC, what's happening is some communities, their libraries aren't buying into this service. So
right.
People who live in those communities can't access audiobooks or other services for people with visual impairment or other print disabilities.
Yeah.
So ideally, it falls under the Ministry of Education, but Rob Fleming is washing his hands of it and saying that it's up to the individual communities to support it. So
we haven't even talked about it through CNIB because a lot of times there are books that have printed blind versions for people that read the blind printing on it.
Oh, the bumpy stuff.
Yeah.
Braille.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that's also available through CELA, Braille text.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite amazing that I use audiobooks a lot because I'm visually impaired and I can't read very long without my eyes hurting.
Mm.
So, mm-hmm. For somebody who's totally blind or has this dyslexia or what have you, they desperately need this sort of access to literature, and it's
right.
The government has a duty to accommodate up until undue hardship, and they're saying, well, we're washing our hands on this one.
Mm.
Yeah. Like you said, because I'm extremely dyslexic myself, and that's how I gain a lot of literature is the audiobooks. I have a whole library full on my computer and my phones of audiobooks that I do instead of trying to read them because I develop headaches from sitting and reading too long, you know?
Oh, I know.
it becomes extremely difficult. But the audiobook, it makes it easy, and then I can grab whatever notes and everything I need off of it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's wonderful having access to audiobooks, and they've mm-hmm. been developed over years. In BC, the Library Services Branch used to, I don't know if they still do, but they used to create audiobooks. To say that, I mean, part of my concern is that people in indigenous communities and other rural areas in the province, how does somebody with a disability get access to literature out there? I mean, poor libraries are gonna say, no, we can't afford to pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
We should have universal access. It shouldn't be something that individual library boards get to say yes or no about, because this is the only way these people can read.
But it should be some way of getting those audiobooks besides from the library. What about, one of those Indigo bookstores or something like that? How are they doing on that?
Well, the difference, audiobooks for the visual impaired and print disabled are set up on a format called DAISY. It's a Digital Audio Information System, I think it's the acronym for.
Okay.
And what it does is it allows you to all indexed, so you can access the audiobooks at any point like a record.
Okay.
And you can look at a menu and go to whatever section you want to go to. So it's an international standard.
Okay.
And that's what the audiobook libraries for people with print disabilities have in them is DAISY format books. And of course, large print and other is available as well. And descriptive video for people who want to watch movies that can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
So these sorts of things, you'd think that the population's library system should be able to cover it without individual libraries deciding yes or nay, the people in their community can or can't have it. It's a pretty critical resource.
This gets back to the definition of basic human rights again. I don't think that knowledge is considered to be a privilege, not a basic human right.
Yeah, I know, that's amazing, eh?
Yeah.
Mm.
I don't know how that one got lost, right? But it seems to be pretty well lost. Not just here in Canada, but in a large portion of the world. If something is written down, that and this is a problem with indigenous communities, and and then place with colonization, they place language barriers.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that that the indigenous people were only going to get a limited amount of education. So if I write a whole bunch of stuff down and then I limit education to the indigenous population, I've actually mm-hmm. kept them from knowing a good portion of what it is that I'm doing.
Yes, that's one of the main things that people in power tend to do is they try to stop people without power from knowing things.
Yeah.
What was it, back in the 60s, they said it was the crisis of democracy. The crisis of democracy was there was too much democracy.
Right.
Yeah.
But yes, there's all sorts of different issues like that, like the access to the library services and domestic abuse services. I'm just amazed that the government provided services. What they did after we were complaining is they added the disabled mm-hmm. as an at-risk group to their list of people who need services for domestic abuse. Mm-hmm. But there was no money or program attached to that. It was just mm-hmm. The disabled were put on a list. But that's very common. Mm-hmm. I just can't imagine, though. I mean, how the disabled could be so low on the government's priorities that they provide them with inadequate incomes and deprive them of intimate relationships and all sorts of things.
Yeah,
it's just staggering considering what a large percentage of the population we make up. We don't even have a ministry. The indigenous population is 4%. The disabled population is 14%.
Right.
I'm not trying to say that the indigenous population don't deserve a ministry.
No, I understand that.
They deserve a lot more than they're getting.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that the NDP was supposed to set up a ministry for people with disabilities. They were actually supposed to set something to that effect up, and it hasn't happened.
No, we used.
I think it's one of the things that oh well, we didn't have funding for it, so it's going to be set, go by the wayside.
Well, with the complexity of the community, we're the most complex population they could possibly imagine. I think that they. The general public and I think the government think of us as being, I don't know, we're all the same somehow. But that's what outgroups are always seen as. They're all basically outgroups are always seen as being homogeneous.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of the complex needs that we have, they're thinking of us all having the same needs and that explains how income disability benefits are delivered. We don't. They don't provide us with. They classify somebody as disabled, and then they kind of give them generic services where they kind of don't even have a worker to talk to develop supports that they need to move beyond being on disability benefits.
Yeah. Well, so you create a system, then you overload those people who would provide the services. You overload them to the point that everything comes to a standstill.
Oh yes, it's actually quite staggering that they in the old days you had a worker, and the mm-hmm. worker knew you, and they could help guide you and support you to move in various directions, and they would help you and access resources for you. Now they don't have workers; they just have strangers that happen to be there on the front desk or on the phone, and they don't know anything about you.
Yeah.
It's hard, very hard to say that these people can provide support. I spent most of my life providing rehab or psychosocial rehab counseling, and you have to know somebody to be able. You have to listen to them to know how to serve them.
Yeah.
All right. So you're on. Okay. So Paul, so give us some more information about your disability caucus here.
Well, the Disability Caucus right now, we're about 13,000 people in BC that are disabled all across the province, and we're growing. We exist to amplify the voices of people with disabilities to a large extent. That's our thing. We're a place where people can come and talk about their various issues that impact us and share news and get support and we're on Facebook primarily.
Yeah. So give us the information there.
The Facebook address is BC Disability. BC Disability. It's Facebook.com/BC Disability.
And you're on Twitter at BC underscore.
Twitter at BC underscore Disability.
All right.
And we're also.
Okay, so we're pretty much out of time. Thank you very much for joining us, you guys.
Okay.
Thank you.
See you guys. Right. Bye-bye.
Thanks,
Paul. All right, so you have listened to the Community Living Show. Special guest was Paul Gilbert. And if you hear what you like to hear, please email us. Our email address is communitylivingradio@gmail.com. We're on three different stations. One you're hearing right now is on CITR 101.9 FM. We're streaming online at CITR.ca. We broadcast from 1 to 2 o'clock in the afternoons. We're also on the Program Exchange, NCRA Program Exchange. Go to previous.ncra.ca. And we're also on Co-op Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM on Sundays from 10 to 11 a.m. on Sundays. And hopefully we will get CHLY on the program. Check local listings, check www.chly.ca in the Nanaimo area. That is it for the program. My name is Kelly Reber, and thank you very much for tuning in, and we will see you all again next week. Thanks very much for tuning in. Have a great day. Bye-bye.